You're listening to Valley Edition. I'm Alice Daniel. Renowned PBS filmmaker Ken Burns will visit the Valley next week as part of a national tour to preview and discuss his most recent long-form documentary, Country Music. The Ken Burns Country Music Roadshow will make stops July 25th at the Saroyan Theater in Fresno and July 26th at the Fox Theater in Bakersfield. I spoke with Burns about the role the San Joaquin Valley plays in what composer Harlan Howard described as three chords and the truth. You're likely the most well-known documentary filmmaker in the U.S. with more than 30 exhaustively reported and researched films under your belt, including ones on baseball, the Vietnam War, and jazz. Was country music an obvious next choice for you?
Well, you know, these projects take many, many years. Vietnam took 10 and a half years to make. Our one on the history of the Second World War took 7 years. The national parks took 10 as well. So there's a lot of overlap. I knew I was going to be doing country music back in 2010. Early 2011, when we had barely started shooting the Vietnam film. So many of these are overlapping for many, many years. So it's not like the next thing is the perfect thing. It's that the story of country music is a perfect subject. I'm in the business of telling stories. My stories happen to be in American history, but that's the way a painter might choose oil as opposed to watercolor, choose to do still lifes instead of landscapes. I choose to do stuff in American history, but it's all stories.
Out of the 16 and a half hours of storytelling we get with country music, what's a story that just sticks with you, something you can't stop thinking about?
Well, you know, it's interesting, and it's germane to my conversation with you and to your audience, and that's Merle Haggard. I knew about him. I knew his centrality to the music, but I didn't know how important it was. And then as we began to research the details of his remarkable story, we were very fortunate. Out of the 101 interviews that we did for the series, probably 80 of them are in the film. 20 have passed away, including Merle, but we were so fortunate to get him before he passed away. And his wisdom and his insights and his thoughtfulness about what a good story and a good song mean, and he's one of the great singer-songwriters of all time, regardless of genre, and what some of the early influences he had. So he's equally as effective talking about the Maddox Brothers and Rose, also from the Central Valley, talking about Lefty Frizzell, talking about various people who were inspirations for him. Bob Wills and his Texas Playboys in the days of the 30s country western swing.
Well, I'm glad you brought up Bob Wills. He was a fiddle player with his band, the Texas Playboys. They blended jazz horn sections and swing rhythms with traditional fiddle music into a style that became known as western swing. He moved to Fresno with his band at the height of his popularity to be closer to Hollywood and to own a horse ranch. For people who aren't familiar with his music, how significant was he as an artist?
Oh, he's really important, and he helps to remind people who may not know about country music. They may love it or they may hate it, but they may not know that much about its history, that it's never been one thing. The Big Bang, as country music folks refer to the creation of it, occurs in the summer of 27 when an entrepreneur named Ralph Peer records in successive weeks the Carter family, which is the epitome of home and mother and the church, the kind of Sunday morning values, and then Jimmy Rogers the next week, who is most definitely a rogue and a scamp and bringing the blues out of the deep, deep South, who's very much Saturday night. And to which then country music expanded even further and did cowboy stuff, did western swing, did the Bakersfield sound as it emerged, did bluegrass and other string evolutions. And so it's never been one thing. And I think we have to understand that swing music was the soundtrack of America. I think jazz swing represented 75% of all records sold in the 30s and early 40s. And so what you see is that country music is ever adapting, and Bob Wills out of Texas wanted to swing in Oklahoma, wanted to swing the way Louis Armstrong and Chick Webb and Fletcher Henderson and Duke Ellington and Benny Goodman and others were swinging in jazz. And he just came from different roots, so he added different instruments, but the rhythm, the propulsion is the same. And it shows you that all of our categorizing, all of the boundaries between different categories don't actually exist to the musicians. I mean, you've got people who are influenced by the jazz stylings of Django Reinhardt, like Chester Atkins, the great guitar player who came to Nashville with the Carter family. You've got Willie Nelson, who still phrases unlike anyone else in country music and owes more to jazz. So jazz, rhythm and blues, the blues, country, rock and roll, they are all so intertwined.
I'm curious, what are some of the similar roots that jazz and country music share?
They share the kind of conversation that African Americans and other European Americans have been having in the South for centuries. The banjo, the classic instrument of an early country band, is an African instrument. The fiddle is, of course, from Europe and the British Isles. And so that conversation between the traditions of the Scotch, Irish, Welsh, English ballads and the blues are very much intertwined in country music. So you would take some of the earlier celebrated heroes of it, A.P. Carter of the Carter family, Jimmy Rogers, who I just described, Hank Williams, the great, perhaps the greatest of all country people, Johnny Cash, and Bill Monroe, the founder of bluegrass music. Every single one of those men had an African-American mentor who took their chops from here to up here, and it's reflected in the music. So it's a wonderful story to tell because it reminds us that at the heart of this are people who are hungry. What's so surprising is that everybody, whether it's Merle Haggard or Buck Owens or the Maddox Brothers and Rose, are coming from abject poverty, not just Depression-era poverty, but poverty before the Depression and after the Depression. Dolly Parton's father paid the doctor who came to the holler to deliver her in East Tennessee with a sack of cornmeal. I mean, she was on TV before her family could own a TV.
Let's return to Buck Owens and Merle Haggard. Their music was often dramatically different. What for you defines the Bakersfield sound, and how do you think Buck and Merle differ from each other?
Well, that's a really wonderful question. I think it's got a kind of a driving beat. It's a post-war sound that's got some insistence to it. It's electrified. It's a little bit different from, and sometimes a lot different from the smoother sound that Nashville was producing at the time. And so it's got an edge. And even though Buck Owens isn't talking about the things, his voice, as Dwight Yoakam, another inheritor of that in our film, describes, the voice has an insistence. You know, tiger by the tail. I've got a tiger by the tail. It's plain to see, you know, and it goes on like that. Merle is called the poet of the common man. Like Hank Williams, who is the hillbilly Shakespeare, Merle understands about life. And so the songs that he writes are from his own experience, some of prison, some of the loneliness that came from that, from heartbreak, from rediscovering love. All of that is an important part of his. And so I think there's more heartache, obvious heartache in Merle's work, even though Buck has got all of that defiance in it. He's singing, as Dwight says in our film, for every Okie, every Arkie, every Texan that came to the Central Valley and was, you know, discriminated against all under the moniker Okies when they first arrived.
When we talk about the Bakersfield sound, was it just the result of Children of the Dust Bowl migration, or was something else at work?
I think there's always lots of things at play, but I think certainly the experiences of the Dust Bowl, the diaspora that it created of hundreds of thousands of Americans. Remember, there was a drought in 46 of the 48 states, so everybody was called an Okie, whether they came from Oklahoma or not, and they all migrated to what they thought would be the promised land and, of course, ran into a desire not to welcome new immigrants. Sounds familiar. And that just repeats itself over and over again. So I think that experience, and let's remember this is during the Depression, so it's the poverty combined with the ecological disaster of the Dust Bowl combined with this migration that is going to be helpful in it. But it's also, as I said, a kind of post-World War II demand for something new, the beginning of electrification, the honky-tonks and the roadhouses that are filling the Central Valley and the oil production that's going on there. So you're having a different kind of demand.
So you mentioned sort of the evolution of all these genres. I'm wondering if rock and roll is one of your next documentaries.
Well, you know, I've thought about that, and people have asked me to do rock and roll for a long time, even before I did A History of Jazz that came out in 2001. I don't think so right now. I mean, I was really content to take jazz and spend many, many years working on that, and then to spend 8 or so years working on country music. But never say never, you know.
As you've said, country music is very much about storytelling, driven in part by the tensions that have shaped American history itself. While the storytelling makes it relatable, I wonder if it's also the storytelling that pigeonholes it for some people who don't understand its breadth and its influence.
Well, I think it gets pigeonholed because of snobbery. I think people say, oh, country music is, you know, just a minor art form, and it doesn't have the sophistication and the complication of classical music or some forms of jazz. But the composer, Harlan Howard, called country music three chords and the truth. That means there's a kind of elemental musical form to it, just as there is in the blues, just as there is in folk music, just as there is in rock and roll. But you can hear the lyrics, and what are they about? All relatable things.
Let's talk about Merle Haggard's biggest commercial hit, which was Okie from Muskogee. It was often seen as a counter-protest to the anti-war movement, and yet Haggard in his later years was open that he smoked marijuana and he spoke out against America's overseas wars. How significant was that song politically, and does it speak to some contradictions in country music?
Well, I think there's contradictions in everybody and in everything everywhere. Nobody is ever one thing. And I think for me, growing up in Ann Arbor, Michigan in the 1960s, we loved Okie from Muskogee for its kind of meta meaning. You know, we laughed at it. What we learned later was that, of course, Merle and everybody on his bus smoked marijuana, and that was just inspired. It did get appropriated by the counter movement to the counterculture, so that the anti-Vietnam War movement sparred a response to them, not so much because they supported the war, but they didn't like what the hippies were doing. So when it got appropriated, then Merle kind of got, you know, grooved and pegged as this, but he outgrew it. He had already outgrown it. He'd transcended it. He was already the poet of the common man, and that was important. And I'm so happy that at the end of his life, he began to talk about the song in relationship to being proud of where you're from. Let's remember that while he's born in California, his family were Okies. And so I think we begin to see that quite often country music is a voice of people who don't feel like their stories are being told. And what's the genius of Merle Haggard is that he takes those stories and makes them universal. And I'm so happy that we're going to be able to be in Fresno and Bakersfield to sort of celebrate his and Buck's and the Maddox Brothers and Rose and Bob Wills and Dwight Yoakam's legacy of understanding what the contribution of the Central Valley, what the contribution of the Bakersfield sound has made to not just country music, but to American music, world music, full stop, period.
Well, that sounds like a good place to end. Ken Burns, it's been a real honor to speak with you today. Thanks a lot.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks so much. Can't wait to see you all.
Again, Ken Burns and his Country Music Roadshow will be at the Soroyan Theater in Fresno, July 25th, and the Fox Theater in Bakersfield, July 26th.